Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously after an unbelievable opening weekend of the Rugby World Cup in Japan. And we opened our podcast with a gong because, well, firstly, I think we need to credit our Japanese rugby brethren for their incredible drum and gong action.
Yes, agreed. What do you think happened there? Do you think the World Rugby originally asked for like a bell or a hooter? Well, this is the only thing that we've got. Oh, this is what we use.
They're probably just built into every stadium.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Enormous gong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
It is good. JB's right there. There is Phil.
Hello, Timothy.
Hello, Tim.
Right, and we've got so much to talk about. So you know where to find us, at Rugby Podcast. And wherever you listen to us, to our podcast, you can get us on Spotify, you can get us on Acast, you can get us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Castbox. What do you use, Phil?
Player FM.
Yeah. I'd like to start the podcast, actually, with a shout-out.
Well, I would just say, hit subscribe, because there are podcasts, short and long, going to be coming thick and fast into your feed throughout the World Cup.
So, basically, there's a podcast for any type of person, of any type of length.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like irreverent rugby content.
Yes, true.
This one could end up being the Ben Talmafuna of podcasts. There's so much to talk about.
Or it could
about.
Be the Baptiste Saran of
exactly.
rugby podcasts.
Yeah, I was just going to just start with a quick shout out to Gethin Jones, the presenter.
Okay,
That's it. Hi, Gethin.
Why is that?
No, I'll tell you later.
Okay. You will, as in you'll tell us on the show, on the podcast later.
I'm going to tell you next episode.
Next episode. What a tease!
What a tease! All right, I tell you what. I'm going to ask a question straight off the bat because I think we just need to get this out of the way, Phil. If it's all right with you.
Yes.
England had the largest winning margin of any side on the opening weekend so far. And why, with that as the context, should England be thinking, it's awful, JB. Come on, just get it out of the way. Why is it so awful?
Why are England awful? That is a great question.
By the way, I'm not asking a question because I agree with the statement. I just know we're going to end up there. So let's just get it out of the way. Let's lance that boil straight away. Come on, JB.
Because this was not a hugely important game in the scheme of things. Let's try and do it in less than, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Okay, so 5 minutes on the clock. Go. England are awful because they are not awful. They are not awful at all. They're an amazing side with amazing players. The coach leaves something to be desired, but we'll get into that in a second. They were strange today. They weren't awful. They were strange, and this is why. They obviously had a tactic, to tire out the Tongans. I think they were kicking it around a bit, and as I tweeted out, I think. Like towards the end of the game, I thought they showed Tonga an awful lot of respect. And I don't mean respect in a good way either. I mean respect as in they weren't playing. So think about the best England performances in recent years. Probably the All Blacks, even though that they lost. Probably the two Ireland games that they've had, where they absolutely ran through Ireland.
Yeah.
And they didn't show respect for the All Blacks or Ireland. They just hammered them. And I didn't see that today against Tonga, and they don't have an excuse. They don't have the Tongan excuse, or the Fijian excuse, or the USA excuse that, oh, we've only just met each other 3 minutes ago. They've been together for 4 years. They know exactly what to do. They know exactly how they want to play, and it was just weird. I don't know why they decided to play a different strategy to the one which they are so devastating at playing.
So I'm not sure I agree with the totally different strategy. So I actually think they showed respect, but they played certainly elements of it similar to the Ireland game where they were kicking a lot. Now, part of that, it had I was reading it almost as a side effect advantage that it tied out the Tongans towards the end of the game.
Yeah.
Which was always going to happen almost regardless of their strategy. But I think it showed some respect to Tonga, but as an approach that they were almost playing this as if they were playing a better team.
Yeah.
And by that I mean they didn't want to play a fast and loose strategy in this game and then totally change it when they come up against serious opposition. I think this was more how we will see them when they play Argentina, when they play France, and if they get to the knockouts.
But they did look nothing like the team that brutalised Ireland.
Well, partly that is they were the smaller pack. They are smaller and lighter than that Tonga pack. So they were carrying hard. They kicked a bit more. They carried hard, but they weren't always getting the change from carrying
hard. Yeah, how many when in fact, I cannot remember the last time I saw Billy Vunipola sat down.
Wow. Yeah. You kind of thought there might be a little bit of a message there for Billy.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely. If you get the opportunity to have a shot on one of your mates, one of your brethren, absolutely.
But it must have been weird for him. Like his earliest rugby memory is watching his dad in the 1999 World Cup captain Tonga.
Yeah.
It must be bizarre from that perspective. But no, I would go along with Phil, and I would also say. No, I would just go along with Phil, actually. I was thinking I could spin it out and say it in a different way, but no, I just don't need to say this in a different way. I agree. I also think you have got to remember that England have had the biggest margin of any side.
Yep.
They did keep a side that were incredibly spirited and were treating this like a huge moment for them.
Well, you're right. All those things are correct.
And they kept them to 3 points. I just think it showed them respect, not deference, and it is just a step along the way to the process. And I think the USA will be another step along. And I don't think England will change the way they play, but I think it will be much more convincing.
England will change personnel, but yeah. I think they'll play a similar style. Just to kind of counter that point a little bit. So England did have the biggest winning margin this weekend.
Yeah.
They also had the biggest
gap in world rankings. I agree, yeah.
So you would expect them to have the biggest winning rankings. And it was not, by any stretch of the imagination, a vintage England performance.
They 100%.
They actually struggled.
Oh, I know. The mistakes were not good.
If England had come out of this without a four-try bonus point, which they were 3 minutes away from doing, it would have been a total disaster.
Yeah.
As it is, it's a solid result against a very spirited side, but England need to be better.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the reason Eddie Jones bothers me so much, and I had this thought today.
I do find this dislike of Eddie Jones particularly strange, given your incredible love of Steve Diamond.
Well, I saw your tweet about the calm, collected.
You posted a little video of Eddie Jones again slamming the table and saying, "This is a calm, collected."
No, I just said calm, collected leader of men.
Leader of men.
Any judgments? You made the judgments.
Well, okay.
So there's no implication at all in that.
So
your sarcasm didn't portray anything.
And can we just to sort of cross fertilize to another game for a second?
Yeah.
When you look at New Zealand, it's only when you see them in a World Cup that you suddenly piece all the bits of the jigsaw from the last 4 years together and go, So when New Zealand came over and played the teams up in the Northern Hemisphere and seemed to be, and everyone was going, oh, they're not quite at their best. It's only then you sort of go, now you go, oh, okay, they were just trying stuff out, weren't they? Because they had their eye on the end goal.
Maybe.
And certainly that is true with New Zealand. I think some of it is true with England. I do think England are a different stage.
Totally. I wasn't highlighting the point. The point I'm saying is this is a World Cup.
Yeah.
And objective achieved. Move on.
Yeah.
That's probably the best way to look at it from an England fan's point of view, definitely. Which is, yeah, 4 points in the bag, move on, hope you play better.
Yeah, five points.
5 points? Oh, yes, of course.
5 points, no injuries, although Henry Slade looks a bit ominous.
Yeah, well, he picked up a knock and he didn't play very well.
Yeah, some of the handling.
He's very rusty, Henry Slade, because he's not played since the
Premiership final. It's his first rugby since Premiership final, yeah.
Yeah.
And to be heavily strapped on his knee, go down at one point, clutching his knee.
Yeah. I mean, it's a position where you've got two guys in unbelievable form, because Tuilagi was deserved man of the match, and Joseph, when he came on, looked a different class. Yeah. So
Joseph is a different class. I mean, I think he's one of England's most consistent performers for about 5 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
He's absolutely, he is genuinely world class.
Yep.
I would stop short of saying world class. He hasn't delivered those performances on the biggest stages. So let's see. But maybe we might.
I think what normally happens during a World Cup.
Well, O'Driscoll did for the Lions.
And Grand Slams.
Over
about a 15-year
period.
Yeah,
but hasn't Joseph got a Grand Slam?
What I'm saying is, normally a lot of World Cup winning teams, you would look back at them and you would go, oh, look, they had seven world class players in that 15. But it's, so you only make that judgment after the World Cup final. Coming into the World Cup, you wouldn't say that player is a world class player.
I'm a bit more fast and loose with my world class assessments. I would put
Owen Farrell world class.
Jonathan,
sorry,
Joseph.
Owen Farrell world class.
Yeah.
Not Jonathan Joseph.
In his position, I don't think he's one of the best few. At least Ed Prop, yes. Now you're talking. I think JJ's great. Don't get me wrong.
Shall we go on to the New Zealand South Africa game?
Yeah, this
that was arguably the next. Oh well, that was arguably the biggest game. Although Scotland Ireland was
no. Well,
France Argentina were big.
With
game.
Foresight, it was arguably the bigger game, and with hindsight, it was definitely the bigger game.
This was an incredible game.
It was.
I love this from start to finish.
Yeah.
I was shocked at how poorly New Zealand started, how they rusty awful. They looked, how shaken they were with the physicality of South Africa, who were totally dominant for that first 20 minutes and came out of that total dominance
3-0 points. And that was the biggest takeaway for me is how dominant South Africa were and how unbelievable New Zealand are at scrambling and just doing whatever it takes
to stop them.
Me and Phil were trying to watch this whilst corralling kids, and we got about 20 minutes in. I was like, they are in trouble here, South Africa, because they hadn't scored, and that to me was a massive worry, because it only took one mistake or one turnover or something, and that's exactly what happened, and they got punished for it.
And it was two mistakes in 3 minutes from South Africa that led to those two tries.
Yeah.
The bridge and the Scott Barrett, and New Zealand exploited it brilliantly.
It reminded me a little bit of, there were echoes of Twickenham when New Zealand played there, in the sense that they were under the cosh for 20 minutes, but no team can sustain the relentless pace that England did against New Zealand and that South Africa did in this game against New Zealand. And so after 20 minutes, if you haven't made hay, well, it's coming back the other way.
Yeah, pressure's a funny thing.
It's like an elastic band. It's gonna ping.
That's a very, very good way to put it. Because if you haven't scored after you set a prep... Like, I always think if a team is camped on another team's line for, 10 minutes and they don't get the score, that is a massive psychological defeat.
It is, yeah, yeah.
It's huge.
You've got to at least get three.
Yeah.
If you don't get... Because South Africa got 3 points after 2 minutes, and then for the next 20 minutes, they were there. They were in the 22. They had opportunities. They had try-scoring opportunities.
And we're battering them. The ball carries.
Every carry was making yards. they were bending and bending the New Zealand line, and they just couldn't do it.
I've got a feeling there might be a chapter two to this story. I really do.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are still thinking that'll be the final.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
And think about the 2007 final, South African batter England opening day, and then it was arguably a TMO decision away from England winning another World Cup.
Yeah.
South Africa still all getting better. I still believe that.
Yeah.
And I think, who are they likely to face? Scotland, no.
Ireland.
Ireland.
They're likely to face Ireland now.
Well, but you look at, right, so Ireland, South Africa, there's one really interesting thing when you dovetail the two together that I took away from the weekend. Ireland looked like old Ireland.
Yep.
And Conor Murray was a massive part of that. He looks like old Conor Murray, which we haven't seen for a long time. And South Africa didn't manage to make the pressure count, and Faf de Klerk had a shocker. By his high standards.
Yeah, he missed. I mean, at one point, it was harder to miss every Springbok than to actually hit one.
Yeah.
Somehow he
picking the
that.
Gaps in between the Springbok.
Yeah, he really
attackers.
Threaded that ball in the worst possible way.
And this is what I talk about. This is why I talk about world-class players on the biggest stages, because coming into the World Cup, everyone will go world-class player. If Faf de Klerk has four matches like that, or two more, another game like that, and gets dropped for Herschel Yanchis, you'd have to go, well, maybe he's not world-class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even.
I'm not saying he will.
The thing with Faf, like a few other players, is Faf can do phenomenally brilliant things. Like things, he has vision that no one else has.
So I'm just spilling tea over myself.
On your nice white top. Yeah, he can do things that no one else can do. Positively, he can also do things that are like schoolboy mistakes negatively. And the George Bridge try came from the pass that he threaded
wild pass.
Half a dozen players where Richie Munga kicks it through.
It's harder to miss one of his players than to pass it to one of them.
Yeah, it was only...
In fact, that shows the skill of Faf de Klerk. He managed to miss all his players.
He is a unique talent.
He definitely is a unique talent.
Oh, there's no question.
A unique but slightly inconsistent talent. Something interesting, I was speaking to some mates last night about this game, and there's something that did strike me, and I texted this to you two yesterday as well. So, New Zealand are no bigger or stronger. If anything, they're slightly smaller and slightly weaker.
Yep.
They're certainly no faster. On average, they've got very fast players like Sever Rees, but are Rees and Bridge faster than Mapimpi and Colby? Probably not.
Colby's play, by the way.
Oh, Colby was
good. God,
he is unplayable at times.
He is.
Yeah. So
they're also. So I was expecting when New Zealand were, whatever it was, they were 17-3 up or something like that at half time, and I was expecting them to accelerate away because their fitness late on in games, they always outscore the opposition late on in games, and they didn't. So they're no fitter than South Africa. So that bodes really, really well for South Africa as a team. And it's probably bad for most other people that are going to play these teams. Mm-hmm. The difference, I thought, was the fine margins and the decision-making. Mm. And the two examples, we've already spoke about the two South Africa mistakes where there's a handling error or there's a turnover or a bad pass. And for a second, South Africa are out of their systems. And it takes them a few seconds to react, whereas New Zealand react like that.
Yeah.
They react so quickly.
Just a tiny bit sharper.
They're like, you know how like sharks can apparently smell one drop of blood from miles away? That's like New Zealand. They get a tiny, tiny whiff and they're in.
There might be a turnover and they've already reacted to the fact that there might be a turnover. And the other thing, which is key in this game and in some of the big international wins, was the penalty count. So Razzie Erasmus, the penalty count he referred to after the game was 11-2 in New Zealand's favour.
Conceded two.
Well, I've seen 9-4 elsewhere.
Either way, they only conceded four against South Africa.
Exactly.
Wow.
It's still... And
well, let's say three. Average it.
When you look back at that game, and the breakdown was a total lottery. It was not particularly well reffed. And there were bodies everywhere, people lying on everything, people coming in from the side. And South Africa conceded a lot of penalties.
Some of the refereeing was
that
abysmal,
time.
I thought.
But New Zealand was so cool and calm, and they only competed. There was a couple of Ardie Surveyor turnovers, one following a brilliant Colby break. Apart from that, they hardly competed at the breakdown because they knew it wasn't worth conceding the penalties. So I was very impressed with those two aspects.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because like Gatland's, I don't know whether it's a phrase that he got from somewhere else and used, but I think of Gatland when I think it, the be the best at the things that require
no skill.
No skill.
Yeah.
Yes, there is that, But in a world where you've got the most elite athletes whose professional full-time job is to be skillful. Is to do those things, the margins between them, like you say, strength, speed, all the rest of it, are minimal.
Yeah.
And that that rugby intelligence that New Zealand have is so it's just priceless.
Even with all that intelligence, you cannot stop someone like Cheslin Kolbe.
No.
When he's
so amazing, isn't it?
He is not
just the heir to Shane Williams. He's better. He's actually better. So
he's so powerful as well.
Yeah.
When he blasted between, I think it was Scott Barrett and his Whitelock who was trying to tackle him, and he just brushes him off like he's not there.
So obviously players are products of their time. So it's not really fair to say he is better than Shane Williams. Shane Williams was...
What about Jason Robinson as a comparison?
That's where I was going next.
Oh, okay.
So Jason Robinson would be a guy who's probably a similar stature. I wouldn't even be surprised if Kolbe was smaller. And I think what impresses me most is, I think there was a stat a couple of years ago that the England under-20s team was bigger than the World Cup winning team in the pack. So God knows what we make of the most recent Springbok team or the most recent New Zealand team. But he's still doing it, despite his size, in this modern world of absolute Goliaths.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what makes him special. It's the old school steppiness and the skills and the speed, but just in the land of giants, where usually you need to be a Stockdale-type character to be making an impact, or a Corabetti.
Well, I think part of it is those characters have always existed in rugby, and long may that continue, that rugby is a game for all shapes and sizes. But it's possibly that it is a land of giants that actually...
Maybe the reason, such a contrast.
Yeah, the reason they do
the contrast is arguably greater.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Stockdale before, but there's another island have got their own stepping wizard, small little pinball wizard, who was playing 15.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit nervous. I was talking to an Irish mate of mine last night, and I said, I think that if I was Scotland... I would be targeting Lama at 15 with high balls and moving him around the park. And, well, one, they didn't really get the opportunity. Scotland didn't really get the opportunity to do it. But everything they threw at him, he took and returned.
I didn't understand Ireland's pessimism. Just before we'll come on to that. Just on the New Zealand thing, there's one thing I can't condone and will not condone.
Ooh.
Scott Barrett's dive for his try.
It was pathetic.
It was
awkward.
Either do a dive... or just put it down. But that was... He looked like... I don't know.
Actually, just before we do move on, what about the reffing? I thought the reffing was so poor.
Broadly, until today, Sunday, as we record this, Saturday's refereeing was dreadful.
Absolutely dreadful. Just little things. So, Aaron Smith knocked the ball on in front of his own post and the officials all missed it. I could not believe it. Just little things that shouldn't really be happening in the highest level. You can't be missing knock-ons.
Individual moments will get missed from time to time. I do get that. So even in the case of, the Argentina-France one.
Oh, what a game.
I was absolutely outraged at some of the blatant decisions that Argentina didn't get.
Even
the one where there was a... I mean, the one that everyone's talked about is Picamole being offside and intercepting. I mean, that was just... Angus, when you look at where Angus Gardner was stood and looking... World Referee of the Year, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
He was looking straight at it. And how he or his assistant referee didn't spot that, I don't understand, because it was so obvious.
Can I tell you the best Angus Gardner quote from this weekend? This is not a beat-up on Angus Gardner. And I'm sure he doesn't say us off.
Well, he's had a lot of good games. But this was a particularly bad one.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I'm sure it was Angus Gardner, and I'll apologise to him if it's not. But one of the Argentines had their hands on the ball. Angus Gardner's shouting, "Leave it blue, leave it blue, leave it blue." So he releases the ball. He goes, "Ball lost." No. It's ball lost, and then it's leave it blue. Otherwise, of course, it's going to be ball lost because you told him to leave it.
Wow. Well, Angus Gardner, I think what actually happened in that Argentina... We should talk broadly rather than specifics, but just on the officiating point, I think what happened is he forgot to put his cards in his pocket.
Oh.
And so rather than face the embarrassment of saying, "I've left my cards in the dressing room, I don't have any, I'm going to have to hold up an imaginary yellow card," he actually just went, I'm just not going to bother giving one. Because how a Frenchman wasn't in the bin in that game is, I cannot cannot get my head around it.
Verve, guile, skill.
It was
determination.
I was really
artistry.
But broadly speaking, we talked about the so let's talk broadly rather than about specific games. The officiating on that Saturday was dreadful. The breakdown is an absolute joke. The offside line is just not enforced.
Oh, we can talk. Yeah. Well,
what's going on? I don't get it. And with the amount that is said, we said before the World Cup, I think I went on as well. I hope we're not talking about refereeing during this World Cup, but for the amount that we had it rammed down our throat about this new pathway of decision making.
Oh, it's just been totally ignored.
It's been completely ignored. What was the point? Like, fine, ignore it, but then don't make us swallow press conference after press conference and story after story about it for a bloody month before the World Cup.
But the problem is, it's not going to be consistently ignored. There are going to be games. So the Reece Hodge incident, which has since been cited, there are going to be games decided later on in this tournament in both directions for that either being given a red card or nothing happening and a team losing one of their best players like Yato. And it's going to happen in both directions. But there's no consistency.
The Yato decision, right, is everything that's wrong with the game today. Like, everything. So, firstly, you've got the decision where they obviously miss a card. And I can, kind of get that. Like you said before, Tim, sometimes individual things go awry. And, if we were looking at this 5 years ago, maybe no one mentions it. 10 years ago, certainly nobody mentions it. But it's been rammed down our throats. So now we come to expect this. And if we don't, there's absolute outrage, as there then subsequently was. Then you've got all the caution over head injuries. Now, I'm guessing Yato would have returned to play, three years ago? So,
He probably wouldn't have. He would have just been given a magic sponge and be back on.
Yeah, so Fiji...
I wonder if he would have got the same magic sponge that Johnny Sexton got from his Irish physio, by the way. Jeez, what was that about? Anyway, sorry, just joking.
Yeah, so Fiji have kind of been let down on two fronts here. The non-officiating of the pathway, and then the been caught up with all the head injury stuff, which I know is essential, this, that and the other, but they've now lost their best player.
And he was the best player on the pitch for the first 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And by the way, Reece Hodge, after that, scored 8 of Australia's points, and Fiji lost their best player. We're not talking about, individual decisions go for you or don't go against you, but we're talking about in the Argentina game, Angus Gardner, and I forget the referee in this one. Was it Jerome Garces in the...
Could have been.
No,
he was the South Africa. Whoever it was. These are decisions which could send sides home from a World Cup quite legitimately, could be...
Yeah, there are very few decisions that could totally decide a game. And I normally hate...
Because there are 80 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got a lot more in your control than out of your control.
But a single decision that, in one fell swoop, takes off Fiji's best player and leaves on a player who goes on to score 8 points, but also leaves Australia with a full complement for the remaining 55 minutes.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's saying, certainly not here, that it would change the result. It's just... it's poorly thought. Well, it's not poorly thought out. It's poorly executed. But everything's there for a good reason. It's just poorly executed.
And I thought they'd put in all these safety nets, like we have the TMOs. What's going on?
The TMO is being paid to rewatch footage. If there was a 5 minute break after that.
Yeah, and the Fijian captain. Captain asked for it to be looked at.
By the way, a 5 minute break while somebody has been dealt with a
head injury. Yeah. No one thought to look back at that incident. He's literally been paid to do that.
Yeah.
There's nothing else going on, so he should be doing that.
And Dan Leo, ex-Samoan player, good all-round good bloke, he's basically dedicates his sort of rugby influence to helping the Pacific Island nations from his role off the field in a sort of ambassadorial role. He asked the question, and I don't like getting into conspiracy theories, but he said, what do you think would have happened were it a Fijian... smashing an Australian in a comparable situation? Because the other element of that is if it had been a red card, potentially you're looking at the decision then is penalty try.
Potentially,
Dan Leo's point was: what do you think would have happened had a massive Fijian smashed someone? and shouldered them in the head.
And they go for a HIA.
I have to say, yeah. I mean, I hate saying this because it sort of goes down that horrible road. Of,
it feels, you know, conspiracy theory.
Well, yeah, it also goes down the horrible road which our society is suffering in general, which is, oh, they would they have done that to the rich white nation? But I'm kind of struggling to see... he's exactly right. He's exactly right. There would have been action if it was the other way around. I can't see how they wouldn't. If
The Tonga game, it was quite clear Anthony Watson, even if he had got hit in the chin, well, it's because he dropped the ball and then was on his knees.
The mitigating factors allow for incidents like that, which is a sun-changing ball carrier.
We got the right decision in the end. Yeah. But that was thoroughly investigated.
And that was well handled.
Yeah.
There was, in the, it was the France-Argentina, there was a Angus Gardner handled one brilliantly, which was Penaud and the Argentine fullback.
Befeli going up for a high ball, yeah.
It was a fair contest. No, they clattered into each other, but they were both in a position to catch the ball. Penaud then catches an inadvertent knee to the head as he's going down. It was just... a rugby incident, to borrow your phrase, Tim. He looked at it. It actually felt like in that the TMO was urging him to have some action.
Yeah,
because the TMO shouldn't have shown him that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There's a couple of clashing factors here. So the irony of the whole situation is the way the refs handled it is probably how I want games to be handled anyway, which is a little bit faster, looser. And for the man on the field to have ultimate control, and if he misses something, well, look, that's just the game. That happens, right?
Except if it's an Owen Farrell high shot.
Which absolutely has to be dealt with there and then. So you got that. And I think, you know, the other factors are, I think as a three, we're probably very spoiled by the standards of officiating in the Premiership, which is far superior to what we've seen, or at least
there are some brilliant referees that haven't been sent as England's representative. JP Doyle, for example,
is
better than most of the refs at the World Cup
that we've seen so far. Yeah, 100% agree.
I mean, if they're not better, they're certainly more in tune with what the authorities want and the systems that they've built for them. So we've got these refs sort of reffing differently, and then we've got these systems which that are utilised in the Premiership and are done very, very well. But they seem to clash. So you've got the worst of all worlds, because it's like this dual mixed up standard of bad, you know, systems that referees don't really conform to.
Mm.
Another just to finish the refereeing on a positive note, we kind of hinted it before, but I think it was Paul Williams,
yeah,
former international player, refereeing Ireland Scotland.
Is that Paul Williams as in the ex Samoa?
Ex
Sale Shark.
I assumed it was.
I would have thought you would have known he's an ex-Sale Shark, JB, if that's the Paul Williams I'm talking about.
If it's Paul Williams...
Play for Stade Francais, Sale Sharks.
If it's Paul Williams that you're talking about, he was Sale Sharks' most expensive water carrier for about 3 years.
No, it is a different...
No, I thought I was going to say he didn't look like him.
No, who is the one I'm thinking of?
Apologies.
No, because Paul Williams was excellent.
Yeah, Paul Williams...
It's not him.
Paul Williams in the Ireland-Scotland game was brilliant. I thought he...
No. Stop. Paul, we need to get to the bottom.
Which Paul Williams?
Paul Williams, right, whose father also played and brother played international.
And he was a Samoan international,
right,
fullback.
No, he is very good.
He's a great player.
I want to have that on the record. Who is the guy that I'm thinking of that played for Italy and might still be playing and played at Sale? And he Luke McLean, that's who I'm going to get mixed up with. Now, he was Sale's most expensive ever water carrier.
But yes, Paul Williams was outstanding. Wayne Barnes, still the best in the world for me.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't get the World Cup final, because I hope England are in it. But if England aren't in it, I hope he gets the World Cup final.
So here's how we work this, right? If there's a referee like Wayne Barnes, all the normal system structures and video refs remain in place. If it's a French referee or someone who doesn't really want to play that way today, we just scrap everything. Because at least, you know, we're going down one system... or the other, but we can't have a mix of them both.
Well, with the amount that Wayne Barnes uses the TMO or doesn't use the TMO, you probably get more consistency that way anyway. I like it. I like his decisiveness when it's on. But those two are comfortably the best of the weekend, so yes, we can end on a positive.
Hang on.
Be like them.
I'm pretty annoyed that we've not spoken more about Argentina and France.
Well, no, we can talk about the games. We were just creating a little...
Bubble of discontent
regarding officiating... with a positive ending, hoping that, there you go, be like that. And I mean, Ledesma was incandescent after the Argentina-France game. He was absolutely beside himself.
Yeah.
At the officiating.
I would say to Mr. Ledesma, concede less points in the first half and you'll be in a much better situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, because France, for the first 30 minutes, were brilliant. They were back to their brilliant best.
Yep.
And brilliant best, by that I mean the best of 20, 25 years ago.
Yes.
Not that we've seen in the last...
Nothing 10, that we've 10, seen 10, in the last decade, yeah.
So when the team was announced, I was a little bit worried. Because, like, you look through it, and I think I might have spoken about this in the preview. These are not giant men. They're not, no. the, you know, they're not the nearly 1,000-kilogram pack which they wanted to put out against Wales. They've left a lot of these big lads at home. I was like, oh, what's going to happen here? And it worked really well. Aldrich carried well. I thought two flankers had a tremendous game. The props were a bit shaky, but I'm starting to give more credit to Argentina regarding that, because those boys can scrimmage. They're in the top 14 week in week out. They can definitely scrimmage. You do have to look at it the other way, which is, aren't Argentina on like 12 consecutive losses or 11 consecutive losses now?
Oh, I don't know. Is that the inverse of the JB Cup?
But to stay on the French thing, what I have been saying for bloody years is the French DNA. When I first remember watching rugby, my favourite team was France. Not just because, and I'm going to show you, that was their old school kit.
I remember that.
Greatest kit. Adidas with the three stripes down the tricolor, in tricolour colours. Oh, thing of beauty. Not just that, but it was the way they played, this kind of flair, and when someone made a break, then flooding through with support and the offloads. And it's you think of players like Aaron Ordeke and Manya and Philippe Sellard and Serge Blanco. That's the way France played. That's their DNA. And
Olivon has a little bit of Manya about him.
But Laporte came in and just did what he did at Toulon, just tried to get massive men and completely ruined the DNA of French rugby.
I did quite enjoy that also.
And Fabien Galthié was a man in that old school mould, and he seems like he's bringing that
but
back.
You ask players who played in Montpellier what they think of Fabien Galthié, and it's not overly favourable. Ask Jim Hamilton what he thinks. It's relatively amusing. I do like what they've done though, which is put on the kids to start with, just go wild lads, and sort of like Wales do with Dan Biggar, then you get the older heads on later, who can settle it down and win you the game.
But the kid, you say the kids, but kids in...
Entermac's 20.
Yeah, Entermac's 20 and DuPont's 22, but they're kids, but they're precocious talents. Incredible.
There's no doubt about that.
They're incredible flair talents. I mean, I think it was said in commentary that Entermac's probably third or fourth choice fly half at Toulouse.
Yeah. Yeah, but he is.
But a precocious talent.
And Vaca Tower, by the way, was not wearing 12.
No.
He's wearing 13.
Yeah, which is more like what we should have expected when we saw those two in the centre.
It was listed at 12.
Yeah, he was.
Maybe it was a...
bit of gamesmanship.
Billy Burns, Mark Atkinson situation, where they swapped shirts anyway. So...
But worryingly for France, and what you mentioned before about South Africa couldn't possibly keep that approach up for more than 20 minutes at any one time. France couldn't keep that approach up for more than 30 minutes in the game because they tired and they dropped back, and Argentina got on top towards the end.
Yeah, and I don't know if
I was expecting Argentina to win because they had so much momentum.
I don't think, did they tire or did they just get a little bit disorganised?
They missed penalties that they had, and they weren't given penalties that they won, but weren't given. Well, they said they didn't get them. But
I still think, not to the same extent as South Africa, but in general, they are getting better. It's a relatively new coach. It's a relatively new way of playing, even though it's the old style of France. I think they're going to be really competitive. Come the next England game, they're going to be very, very competitive.
I think... So
watch them lose to Tonga now.
It's always possible. I think having watched the two games this weekend, I am more nervous as an England fan.
Yeah.
I thought France and Argentina both put on a better display than I expected.
By the way, did you see Argentina in the tunnel before they walked out?
No.
They were all the replacements were bouncing up and down, pushing and hitting. the players as they walked out.
Yeah,
Matera's face, that guy, the whole he's an intense man. I love the passion, the way they scream and cry during the anthems. I would have run. If I met them down a dark alley, I would sprint the other way.
I don't know if you noticed this. I tell you who is in unbelievable shape. Wenceslas Laurie. Goodness me. That guy is... he looks like he's... I wouldn't say chiselled out of granite. It doesn't really do him justice. He's a remarkably sculpted man. Remarkably.
Yeah, they're not the big lumpy pack.
With the exception of
Vormahina, yeah.
But even the props are, you know, relatively small. They're not small by any stretch, but they're relatively small compared to Bentamafuna.
What's really interesting is, again, in build-up, a lot of people were saying, "Oh, problem for Argentina is they've lost the pack. They used to have a fiercesome pack, and they don't have it anymore."
Stupid.
France got battered up front.
Whose stupid idea was it to go around spreading rumours about Argentinian scrimmaging just before World Cup?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, you're right. So here's my... I've got two questions. So Phil sort of answered it. Are you boys now? We've seen all three of these teams play. More concerned.
I'm back to where I was a year ago.
Okay. And B, how much are you looking forward to us looking forward to going to that England Argentina game? Tim,
I haven't really given it any thought that you two will be there at England Argentina. Not that bothered.
Do I wear an England jersey? Because although everyone thinks I hate England, I love England. I love what they do for our download numbers.
I want you to wear the Chris Robshaw signed jersey and have it part of Resurrection. What's the opposite of... not Retribution, that's not what I mean. But
Resurrection works, what? Yeah. Retribution.
No, it's not Retribution.
No.
But it's like when you... Oh, I can't think of the word. When you sort of like put things right.
Yeah. Welcome back to that.
Yeah, but whatever that is, hashtag 2019. Just exercise the Robshaw demon.
Well, you've got to beat Argentina and you've got to beat France first, so let's take it one step at a time.
No, we've just got to beat Argentina, that's it. If we beat Argentina, we're through.
Argentina and USA, 3 wins.
The France is just for which position we get.
Okay, so do I wear an England top or do I wear a Jaguares top?
Jaguares. For you.
Yeah, I'm thinking it. I could support either team. Not really bothered.
Ireland-Scotland this morning.
Well, okay, so what annoys me the most in the world is
that all your predictions came wrong.
So let me tell you.
You'd be much better just flipping a coin.
Yeah.
Like, or everyone would have been much better. Listen to JB's predictions, put an accumulator on the opposite happening and you'll be quids in.
My accumulator failed pretty early on in the weekend. So, yes. My thought process for these teams is they've had plenty of time to be together. It's a World Cup. They've got no excuses. Because there's not been much rugby before that, they've pretty much got full fitness. So, you know, there's a couple of guys out, like Afalatau, but generally speaking, every squad is as strong as it can be coming in because I've had the summer off. So you combine all these things and you think, what is the best version of that team, because that's where they should be.
Yeah.
And Ireland showed up with the best version of Ireland, and Scotland, I do not know what I was watching. They were garbage.
This was 2018 vintage Ireland.
And it was
2018 where they won the Six Nations. Leinster won everything that they could win. They beat New Zealand.
Andy Farrell's defence was the bedrock of their success. Conor Murray was kicking brilliantly.
Yeah.
Johnny Sexton was able to sit in the pocket because the team up front were doing the business.
Yeah, the pack was grinding out opposition, turning them into a pulp.
And I, so, yeah, I'm...
Stander was running over people.
And I've never heard so many pessimistic Irish fans coming into this weekend. There's a bunch of them I work with who are also, I'm really worried about this. The chap on our on the Betfair show, Gavin, that we did, he was thinking, oh, it's, you know what,
it's over.
It's over. We're coming in world number one and it's over.
You know, although Phil referenced an Ireland teams from only a few years ago, this was a Scottish team from about 5 years ago. This is like pre-Vern Cotter Scotland. It was absolutely...
This is Andy Robinson Scotland.
It was absolutely dreadful. Dreadful.
Now, how much of it do you attribute to Scotland just being that bad and fluffing their lines on the bigger stage? And how much can be attributed to Ireland?
Oh, Ireland didn't let them play.
Yeah, but they kicked away everything. They kicked everything to Jordan. I mean, that is obviously the plan.
Yeah, but that was obviously
the
plan.
Keep it in hand, boys. You know, you've
well,
got,
no, because
you've got Hogg, you've got Johnson, you've got Finn Russell.
But every time they tried that as well, every time they tried to return the kicks, it's just Ireland's kicks were excellent. Every time they tried to return it, they got tackled, turned over, and smashed.
Yeah, but...
The kick chase of Ireland, again, it was Ireland's blueprint... That won them the Grand Slam.
Has anyone ever looked at Finn Russell and thought, yeah, that is, that's my Owen Farrell type or Dan Bigger type of tactical kicker, control the game type player? No, just let him play.
Yep.
And the problem, Ireland did not let him play.
They didn't let him. And also, Johnny Sexton looked suspect when Ireland weren't dominant up front. It's the same with any international team. Owen Farrell and George Ford behind a pack going backwards. Does not look as good. When England have good ball, he's as good as anyone in the world.
Well, I would argue that Finn Russell and actually most of the Scottish backs are fairly used to now playing behind a pack, which is adequate, and maybe they were less than adequate today, but they've never been a dominant pack. I mean, they were never dominant in Twickenham against the English pack, and yet they scored, 38 points in the second half?
In a half.
They can do it. They can, and they decided not to.
I think them deciding not to, they didn't have the option. And McGeechan pointed out at half-time, the rush defence, the blitz defence of Ireland, was run like a targeted blitz defence.
On the two playmakers, he said, didn't he?
Yeah. It doesn't matter if you stop him, just disrupt him. They threw someone fast as you possibly could, almost out of the line, at Finn Russell, and it totally disrupted him, and at Stuart Hogg. And you could see both of them getting more and more frustrated because they weren't being allowed to do anything like what they wanted to do.
It was very, very disappointing.
Yeah. And from a point... Well, that's I'd say that's the biggest takeaway. But in terms of my predictions, I'm sat here very smug.
You smug?
I nailed it. Yeah, me smug, yeah. Because I said Australia comfortably, Ireland comfortably. I said Argentina would sneak it. But anyway. But the what I did think, also, when we talked about it, I said, Japan can't trouble Ireland. They could trouble Scotland, but they probably won't. Actually, that's the takeaway now, is that final game in that pool...
It's going to be a very interesting
finish.
Because the pressure is on Scotland.
And Scotland would have had a lot of pressure on... Would have felt a lot of pressure coming into this game, knowing that it was a shootout for top spot.
When I was watching that game, I was thinking, did Townsend make a mistake by not selecting either Hugh Jones or Rory Hutchinson?
Oh, yes. We talked about it before.
Yes. Rory totally. Hutchinson, obviously, he's very, very green, but very talented. Hugh Jones has not been playing.
So is Seve Reese, by the way.
True. Yeah, very true.
And George Bridge.
Yeah.
But they both look alright.
You're right. But just, it was, so Hutchinson is such a dangerous runner, and Hugh Jones was, certainly 2 years ago, such a talented player that it almost just by having the name or the ability of them in that line, well, then you're trying to do a blitz on three men rather than two men, and it becomes you're just asking more questions. Because I thought the two centres who are decent players, but they didn't do anything, Johnson and Taylor. So
yeah,
just a thought,
just to ruin all my arguments. Looking at the stats here, kicks from hand, only 27 from Scotland compared to 39 from Ireland.
Yeah, Scotland again, it's the pack. They didn't have much ball.
But when you look at the teams that you're thinking could be World Cup contenders, Ireland, England, New Zealand, South Africa, all played the same. When they're under any sort of pressure or when the ball's not quick, box kick it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Every single and Wales will do the same.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the box kick on the slow ball is absolutely fine.
So sort of returning back to England and the way they played against Tonga,
yeah.
It's actually, no, this is how a World Cup is going to be won. This is how every World Cup has ever been won.
Yeah, but Scotland aren't those four powerhouse teams.
Precisely.
They need to take risks.
They need to take risks, yeah.
Yeah, but they weren't allowed.
It's like Japan. Japan, the only way they can combat one of those tactics as they did in 2015 is by doing something very different.
It was the most disappointing of probably every performance.
100%.
Even Tonga got 3 points. Tonga and Scotland have scored an equal amount of points. Think about that.
Yeah.
Russia scored more points. Although,
yeah. Did anyone watch the full... Did anyone get the full house this weekend and watch the other game that we've not spoken about?
Sale Sharks versus...
I didn't get up on... I didn't wake up on Sunday morning. I've just watched highlights. I cannot say I have watched every single World Cup game so far because this is the one I didn't want.
I watched half it. So can I say I've watched everyone?
No.
And I watched it, but I was out quite late last night, so I watched it in the gym this afternoon, the full game back.
You've watched the whole game, though. Fair play.
Yeah, but not at the right time, unfortunately. It's Italy 47, Namibia 22, and this was a bit similar to the Russia Japan game, where the lesser team shocked the better team by a very early score, disrupting them. But ultimately, Italy's pack did look great, admittedly, against a poor Namibian team.
Yeah, 22 points against Italy. Nothing to scoff at.
I mean, Italy should be a bit worried about their leaky defence for a couple of those tries.
Yeah, very much so. So something interesting about Namibia, obviously they're coached by Phil Davis, who used to be RGC and also interviewed them. They run a traffic light system. And are you aware of what the traffic light system is?
No. Well,
So what they
sounds,
do...
Sounds like something out of a primary school.
Yes, it's something like that. They've basically got a bunch of players. If you're a green player for Namibia, right, that means that you're capable of 80 minutes worth of international rugby. If you've got amber, it's like you've got about a half, and if you're red, well, maybe you shouldn't be there, but you know, you're the best that we've got.
Do they tell the players this?
I don't know, but that's what... Yeah, well, I don't know if they tell them or not, but this is how they market their cards to decide who they're going to play and what players that they've got. But it does put it into context what these tier two nations have got to go through just to put out a team. So to score 22 points, regardless, is bloody impressive.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, they gave a great account of themselves.
Yes, agreed.
One of these days, I think we're going to find a very good Namibia team because, yes, they're not actually that populous as a nation. I don't even think they've got a Currie Cup team. Or they might have a Currie Cup team.
They might have in the past. I don't know.
Are the Border Bulldogs?
Don't know.
Namibian? Anyway, not that it matters. But you can imagine that they could scout South Africa and find quite a few Namibian qualified guys. You know, it wouldn't surprise me in the future that if they do get a little bit more competitive.
Well, they gave a great account of themselves. There was a few entertaining things that have happened during this World Cup so far. On Australian rugby, this was after the England game. Hold on a minute. This has got a lot of the... Pacific Island players. Are you allowed to... some people...
just say whatever.
Do people get offended by Pacific Island? I've had people say before, you can't say Pacific Island.
What?
I know.
There are Pacific Islands.
Well, whatever.
They're islands in the Pacific.
Yeah.
This is players from islands in the Pacific.
This is on Fox in Australia.
Tuolangi with those two first half tries, man of the match against his homeland, Tonga.
Love you
to stay with us.
He's literally called Manu Samoa Tuolangi.
Oh my god!
So,
to be fair to the guys, they might just be told like, you know, Billy's Tonga and they got mixed up.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're reporting on rugby, you should know the difference.
How about this? Don't mention it. Yeah. That'd be the better way.
Yeah, that's fair. And the other one, of course, which has done the rounds massively, which is amazing.
Players in the All Blacks 23 will make the Rugby World Cup debut, or if they come off bench anyway, will make the Rugby World Cup debut. What would you be telling them to calm the nerves?
Well, I don't think you can sell them anything, really. They'll be shitting themselves, quite frankly.
That's a man that no longer cares, isn't it?
Graham Henry.
Brilliant.
That's a man that no one's going to fire him. You know, he's not worried about future employment. Doesn't care.
Love that so much.
It's so good. So good.
Ah, good lad.
Well, that's what, when you've won a World Cup, yeah, you can just say do what you want. I quite like getting, but that's what I quite like about. I'm not saying this about Graham Henry, although he is an elder statesman, but relatively speaking, he's still quite young. But I do like that about old people as well. It's just when they just go, I don't care anymore.
Got on
don't give a shit anymore.
got my career.
Yeah.
Say what I want. I'm totally saying what they want. Stuart Barnes is doing the rounds for Australian TV.
He's the English pundit on Australia's Fox coverage.
That's right.
Those poor Australians.
They'll get a stellar service from Stuart, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks like we've done a swap. So is there like an exchange program? Do we send one there and they send us?
Who would be the Aussie count equivalent?
Oh, I don't think there is one.
Well, Michael Liner's obviously working.
Yeah, but he's won a World Cup.
And he's brilliant. He's very, very good.
What
are
you saying about
like
Stuart?
Him.
You're saying he's not brilliant?
Well, that's not... it's just very good at the things he does.
Yeah. But like, it would be like who's a Australian player who played a few times for Australia?
Oh,
Graham Bond
in the same era.
Go with Graham Bond, right? A guy who's phenomenally talented. Actually, played at Sale Sharks. He played 10.
I thought he was a Kiwi.
No, Bond is definitely Australian.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Played for the Brumbies. I thought he was absolutely awesome. Played against the Lions too. 12 or 10 must have two caps. So that'd be the guy. Because, you know, Stuart Barnes was pretty talented back in the day.
Yeah.
He could play a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, does Graham Bond have the same views as Stuart? I have no idea. But, yeah, let's go with Graham Bond.
Now, I'm going to suggest something now, because we've had a load of people putting questions and stuff on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast. We could have a bit of a question time Q&A quickfire session, which would also fit in nicely with a World Cup quiz, which Phil has sorted, which we could then also combine with our predictions for the coming games, and we could do that in a little pod. We could just have a quick break now, go and get a cup of tea, and then have a Q and A pod coming up in the feed next.
I am parched, so that sounds like a great idea.
And I've got a horrible cold, which is why I'm breathing heavily.
You sound a bit like Graham, a bit more like Graham Henry at the minute.
I feel awful, boys.
I can't wait to we're sat in a 28 degree incubation chamber. Of a dungeon.
Yeah.
I can't wait
to get just acclimatization for Japan.
Yeah. Can't wait to get ill for you. Just before we set off.
Yeah, ideal. Just before we go in, why don't you tell everyone where they can get some wonderful Egg Chasers rugby stash from? And also a razor.
I'll tell them on the next podcast, as well as the quiz and our predictions for the next round of games. But just as I say, these are going to be coming. We normally do them every single Sunday night, so they're there for you on a Monday morning. Of course, we will still be there for you. But it's the World Cup.
Oh, are we allowed to talk about Premiership Cup in next? Come on, quickly. We can do quick.
Maybe.
It does matter. It is rugby.
So me and Tim will leave at the end of the next one. Me and Tim will leave and you can have as long as you want.
You heathens. Heathens.
So, right, hit subscribe and we're going to go and get a cup of tea. We'll be back in a minute.
Fine.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.